Marriage Today presents Q&A by Jimmy Evans.
This is a question that came in, and it says, when I am forgiving my parents for iniquities, do I do it just in my heart or I do it face to face? I think you ought to do it just in your heart. I don't think it's necessary to go to your parents and to confront them with what they've done. Sometimes it's a little offensive to go and say, I just want you to know I've forgiven you for all the rotten stuff you did. And so I think it's best just to do it in your heart. If you feel like the Lord is leading you to go and talk to Him, that's good. But it needs to be very carefully done in a very careful confrontation. But I just think in your heart, and if you do confront them, you always have to go with this attitude. Regardless of what their response would be, my forgiveness is settled in my own heart. It's not contingent or dependent upon their response. Let me go to some of these other questions. If you have problems with your spouse, how do you not show it around your child? You do your very best not to show it. You do your crying in private. You do your talking in private. You go to counseling. You do whatever you can do. But you just put on your game face and you just don't let your children see your reaction. And you may be dishonored by your spouse. You may be rejected by your spouse. You may be very frustrated in private. Talk to your spouse and tell them how you're feeling about what they're doing. And if you feel frustrated or whatever, find a friend to talk to about your frustrations. But do your very best not to let your children see anger, disrespect, and things like that. And if they see your spouse acting in a wrong way, they see problems there, let them see you handle that in a godly way. Let them see your honor in the face of dishonor. Let them see your prayers and faith in the midst of the wrong behavior of your spouse. You're teaching your children to be overcome or to overcome. You're teaching them to be conquerors or victims. You're teaching them to be shoved around in life as helpless pawns on a sea of fate, or you're teaching them to overcome evil with good and do the right thing in the face of wrong. And I'm saying everything is a backdrop for our children of how do I respond when I get older to people who treat me bad? How do I respond to stress in our family? How do I respond when our marriage isn't going well? Teach them how to do that. And do your grieving and your complaining in private. How do you deal with having been a bad image bearer to a 23-year-old son, and what do you say to them now? He seems to be agnostic. Repent to God and repent to the child. Just go to the child and say, you know, I made many mistakes and I'm so regretful. Don't make it seem, though, to the child that you're saying, obviously, I made a lot of mistakes because you're so rotten. Let that child know, you know, I'm so proud of you and I think the world of you. Forgive me for what I haven't done. And then you pray your guts out. Let me say something. Ain't nothing the devil has done that God can't undo. And there ain't nothing you've done that God can't undo. And so, love them, be a good example to them, and pray for them. And God will be your partner, even if you've made mistakes. Thank God that He forgives our mistakes. And thank God that He can repair those mistakes. What do I tell my kid to help him take care of the class bully in school? Bullying is a very dangerous thing, and the principals and the teachers in that school should be aware that there's a bully there. If there's a threat of danger, my nephew in the second grade, a little gang of boys in school threatened to kill him. And he's a little second grader. And the school needs to be aware that there is a class bully there. And I think that children should be taught to not look a bad dog in the eye. You know, if there's someone who's a bully, just leave them alone, avoid them. But if a child comes and tries to harm them physically, that they can protect themselves physically, not in an aggressive way, but in a protective way. And I think little girls ought to be taught the same thing. They ought to be taught how to protect themselves in danger. They ought to be taught, you know, to run and to find an authority figure if there's imminent danger. In other words, if going to an authority figure is available to them, go to that authority figure. If walking on the other side of the street is available to them, walk on the other side of the street. But if you're being physically bullied and damaged in that way, then you strike back as well as you can, and then you run and go find someone who'll help you. But where there's a bully in school, the authorities need to know about it and they need to take action against it. And if they won't, it creates a dangerous environment. And I'll tell you, in the environment that we now have in schools, there's little tolerance for bullying. But authority figures need to know about it. Our children are 5, 7, and 10. If we've already made many of the mistakes you have mentioned in communication, how do we reverse the effects? Just start doing the right thing now. Just tell your kids if you've done something wrong, you know, tell them that, you know, we made this mistake and we're sorry. Just start doing the right thing now. They're very pliable. At 5, 7, and 10, they're still wet cement. Just set up the forms in a different way and they'll get there. It may take a little bit longer than if they're younger, but it'll work. Do you allow your children to listen to different kinds of music? You bet. Country music, classical music, you know, rock music, not acid rock, not demonic rock. But yeah, we let our children listen to different kinds of music as long as the spirit of the music and the words of the music and the lifestyle of the musician was one that we approved of. As children get older and they have their own cars, you have a lot less ability to monitor what they're listening to on the radio, but we totally monitor what they bring into our home. And so, yeah, it's just the type of music to me is not important. It's the spirit and the words of the music and the lifestyle of the musician. Should you be friends with your children? The answer is friendship's optional. You know, Brent told me one time, you know, I was disciplining him and we had a great relationship. And he said, Dad, I don't like you anymore. And I said, Brent, liking me is optional. Minding me is mandatory. And so, you know, friendship comes and goes with your kids. And, you know, you shouldn't tell them all your problems. They should not be your confidant. Those kinds of things. Find adult friends, healthy Christian adult friends. And but, you know, you have a good relationship. You need to very desperately work at keeping the relationship, the ability to talk, the respect, the lines of communication open with your child. But the friendship is an optional thing. We're dear friends with our kids today. I mean, they're precious, precious friends of ours because they're adults and we're all adults. But growing up, it came and it went. How do you protect your children from a grandparent who is a very hands-on grandparent and is a non-Christian? A grandparent has a privilege to be with a grandchild, not a right, and the Supreme Court recently upheld that. And we need to understand that everyone except the parent has a privilege of dealing with that child. The only one that has that right is the parent. You will not parent my child unless you agree with my values. Now, my parents are saved today, and they're wonderful Christian people, but when our kids were growing up, they weren't. And they were still good people and moral people, but they were allowing our kids to watch television programs and movies that we didn't allow. Because in some cases, they were spiritistic. There are a lot of cartoons that are spiritistic and even occultic. And I found out that my parents were doing that, and I explained to them, we do not allow our kids to watch those things. Now, when they're over at your house, I expect them not to watch those things. And I remember, you know, at that point, kind of an eye rolling, because they thought we were fanatics anyway. In Christianity, and I told him, I said, now listen to me. If you want the kids to come over to your house, you'll obey our rules. And I remember, you know, my parents, you know, I'm careful in the way I talk to my parents because I love and honor my parents. If there is a non-Christian grandparent who is a good moral person who obeys your rules with the kids, that's great. You know, there's non-Christian or Christian, that's great. But if they're a person who violates your rules, an example of this is my best friend in college, is an alcoholic, was, and I'm not sure the disposition of his life today. His grandfather taught him how to drink when he was a little kid. And his grandfather would take him off to his farm. And while he was on his farm with his granddad let him do everything that no one else let him do. And if you know that there is a grandparent or another authority figure who is doing that with your child, they have lost the privilege of having your child in their presence. And so if they want to be hands-on, they follow the rules, and you're the one who sets the rules because you're the parent. What do you think about the family bed? My husband is gone a lot, so I let my son sleep with me when his dad's home. He sleeps in his bed half the night, but crawls in bed with us and wakes up. Your children aren't sleeping in their own bed. Now, our kids, let me tell you what we did. Julie and Brent both came and slept in our bed half the night for a couple of years when they were little kids. Julie started it when she was about 1.5 years old or something like that. About 2 or 3 in the morning or midnight, she'd crawl in our bed and she'd sleep there all night. Well, then Brent, when he was about the same age, he started doing the same thing. We had 2 kids in our bed about half the night. So finally, we decided this stinks. So we said, you're going to sleep in your own beds. And so we put them in their own beds at night, and Brent went and slept with Julie. And and they loved that. That was great. We didn't mind. You know, they were little kids. And so the day came, and I can't remember what their ages were. I just can't remember. But they were little kids. And Julie came in and said, you know, Mom and Dad, I'm tired of Brent sleeping with me. And can you tell him to sleep in his own room? And so we brought Brent in. He's a little boy. And I said to Brent, Julie doesn't want you sleeping with her anymore. Oh, Dad, don't, no, it's fine. I won't bother her. I'll sleep on the floor. And I said, no, Brent. And there, all of our rooms were right together. I mean, within, you know, inches of each other. I mean, right there in the end of the hall together. So it's not like it was on the other side of the house. And we said, Brent, you're going to sleep in your own room. And so we put him in bed that night. It was the most pitiful night of our entire lives. He wailed. And I said, Brent, we're going to spank you if you get up. And if you come to bed with Julie or us, you can get spanked tonight. Now, you lay there in your bed, and you're a big boy now. You sleep in your own bed. He wailed in there. And this is so terrible. He laid at the threshold of the door and wailed for hours. And so, oh, it was terrible. So he laid right there, and we didn't budge. And just don't budge. Put headphones on and just let him wail. And you need your own time together in bed. And children can ruin that, especially if they come to bed with you when you go to bed. They need their own bed, and you know, especially when they get to a certain age. Put them in their bed and let them respect that. Make sure that there's a nightlight on. Make sure that they're you know, safe, and it's a proper atmosphere in there. But make them sleep in their bed. It's really healthier for them and actually healthier for you also. Let me see here. How do I protect my three girls from their father's destructive behavior? And I have several questions here about raising your children with different values. It's very important that parents agree. And even if your spouse doesn't have all your values or they don't do things God's way, it's important for you to agree on parenting. Sit down, talk it through. And when destructive behavior here, destructive behavior can range anywhere from serious abuse to just, you know, letting them watch movies that you don't agree with or having standards that you don't agree with. If there's abuse, and I'm talking about sexual abuse, physical abuse, or things like that, it warrants separation. And I didn't say divorce. If there is serious abuse going on in a home, you don't play games with that. And what you say is, you stop or we're out of here. And you don't just stop, you're going to go get help. And I mean real help and accountability kind of a help. And if you're not going to do that, these children's lives are too precious for me to put around you when you're destroying their lives. And don't you think I won't leave, and don't you think I won't find a court that will support me in getting custody of these children. I'm talking about destructive behavior now. Serious abuse, real damage that's happening to the children. Apart from that, you have an ungodly spouse. Maybe you were unequally yoked in marriage. You made a mistake, or you didn't know any better. Maybe both of you were non-Christians when you got married, and now you're a Christian. Do the best that you can. And let me just say this. Abraham Lincoln said, let us have faith that right makes might. Have faith that your godly influence is more powerful than their ungodly influence. Have faith that your prayers are more powerful than the bad example that they're showing. Just have faith. Don't lose heart. Don't become, you know, vindictive and negative and hostile towards your spouse. In fact, if your spouse is ungodly, honor them and treat them right. And they'll open their heart to you, and you have the best chance of influencing them in a right way. I'm talking now about wrong behavior and non-Christian behavior, things like that. I'm not talking about real abuse and real damage, serious damage that's going on there. There were several questions in that regard. There are some single parent questions, and one is from a lady who is a single parent, and she's asking about a male role model. She's saying basically, I don't want to get remarried. I don't care anything about remarriage, but I'm concerned about my son having a role model. You should be. You need a partner. And one of the most important things in single parenting, you know, some single parents can be terrific parents. Don't ever think if you're a single parent that you can't succeed in parenting, but you can't do it alone. You need partners, relatives, church pastors, youth leaders, children's leaders. You need friends, godly friends who can be role models, same sex and opposite sex. Find a community to connect with, and the best place to do that is in a good church. Find a community of people who have your values, connect with them, and make sure that there are opposite sex role models. In this case, it's a boy. Make sure that there are men, coaches, teachers, friends, grandparents, uncles, things like that, that you purposefully connect as much as you can into that child's life. And the same is true for little girls. In the case of a father, maybe who has custody of his children. There are some blended family questions in here. I'm going to get to these in just a minute. And then some discipline questions. And one of the discipline questions that I want to answer was a question about a young boy who's being spanked and he laughs about it. It's just not getting his attention. When I was growing up, spanking really didn't help me very much. When I was in school, as an example, we had a contest to see who could get the most swats. And I came in second. My friend, I just couldn't catch him. And we were not at all dissuaded from our behavior through swats. And they hurt like all get out. But we just didn't care. They just, you know, pain lasted 2 or 3 minutes and it was over. It just didn't hurt me. But you would have driven me crazy by giving me a detention. Because I'm real ADD. In school, I was so ADD, if they would have been, you know, giving Ritalin back there, they put me on heroin. I mean, I was... So, to put me in a room where I couldn't do anything for 30 minutes, I would have become a nun. I'm telling you. It changed forms of discipline. If this boy is... Because they're saying we're afraid we're going to harm him if we spank him any harder, and he laughs at us when we spank him. You have not found the right method of discipline for this child. And my suggestion is the corporal discipline isn't working with him. Losing privileges, take away his Nintendo or something like that, his privileges with other kids, and you'll find that there is a form of discipline that would get his attention. In his case, it's just simply not working. There's one about sex, and this is talking about a little girl. I think she's about 6 years old or so, and she's masturbating. She's touching her clitoris with her hand through her clothing mostly. And I think this is the mother writing the question here, saying that she notices that this little girl is maybe not masturbating, but it's the prelude to masturbating and touching herself. And how do you teach your children about masturbation and things like that? Well, the worst way to do it is to tell them that your hand's going to fall off, that God's going to strike them dead or something like that. Well, when kids discover themselves, they discover that it feels good. Little boys are more prone to masturbation than little girls are because, first of all, their penis is easier to get to. It's easier to touch. There's more sensation there. Some ladies have never masturbated grow up. A lot of them do. The problem with masturbation is not the masturbation. When children are growing up and they're very sexual, they'll have wet dreams. In fact, that was the question that Karen asked Brent that night at dinner. She said, Brent, have you ever had wet dreams? And that's when I almost fell off my chair, just, I thought I was a very mature adult. And Brent said, yeah. They have wet dreams. When children, they're sexual. And boys and girls, when their little hormones are going and they have all those feelings, when they need a release, they'll have nocturnal emissions, what it called, or wet dreams. And sometimes they masturbate. That's not the problem. The problem is their thought life. What masturbation is always connected to fantasy. Whether a little boy's thinking about a girl he saw or an image in a movie or something like that, or a little girl is fantasizing. It's the fantasy, the thought life, is the danger of it. I think you're making a mistake to just simply say, don't do that. A child will masturbate. They will have those thoughts until they learn to take their thoughts captive. You can take all the cold showers you want to take. You can do anything you want to do to try to stop sexual feelings. And even adults and married people deal with masturbation, lust, and fantasy, and things like that. What I would teach this little girl is this is your clitoris. This it feels good, doesn't it? Yeah, God made that now. And that's for marriage someday in the future, where it's really going to feel good when you and your husband have sex. And that's why God made it. Let me tell you why you should control these impulses today. And that is, it'll make it more special for later on. And the other thing is because it's an entry point for the devil to come and to put bad thoughts into your mind. What you need to do when you have this impulse is just turn your mind and begin to think on right things. And just to deal with it in your thought life. The same thing is true of boys. Don't threaten them. Don't warn them that something horrible is going to happen. It doesn't work. The only thing you can do is just tell them. You need to control this because it'll create a bondage in your life today. And it will make it more special if you'll wait. And the way to do it is to control your thought life. And again, the danger of masturbation is not masturbation. The danger of masturbation is it is connected to your thought life. Your thought life feeds it, the desire. An example is people who are hooked on pornography, they can't get enough sex. I mean, you find a man who's hooked on pornography, they'll masturbate 6 or 7 times a day, and they just can't get enough because it's just a driving mechanism that you cannot get enough release. And so what we need to teach our children, and it's the perfect time to teach it, is for the rest of your life, you're going to have a temptation to masturbate. For the rest of your life, you're going to have sexual temptations. There's only one place that sex for you will ever be satisfying, and that is in an undefiled marriage bed. And prepare them for that. In the meantime, you need to take control of your thought life. 2 Corinthians 10. The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but they're divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. Every high thing that raises itself against the knowledge of God, we take captive into obedience to Christ. You teach your children how to do that. And as they do that today, the masturbation issue, it may not go away. They may sneak around and masturbate or whatever. And they probably will, girls and boys. But the point is, equip them as much as you can for the real answer. And the real answer is their thought life.
Thank you for listening. For more information or additional resources by Jimmy Evans, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.